the government, but by the people who are supposed to back any opposition. I mean, the opposition has to be following the agenda that these regional powers and international powers.
Speaking of chemical weapons, what guarantee does Syria have that the chemical weapons that were moved out of Syria will not move into the wrong hands and the insurgents that are actually embedding more terror in the country?
I think the Russians are guaranteeing that. This is not to say that the chemical weapons that were used in Syria did come from Western arsenals, did not come from the batch that the Syrian government had, and it was proven. And you have to go and read the article by Simon Hirsch in the London Review of Books. So that was clear that if anyone has used chemical weapons, it was the opposition, and they were supplied by the Turks. And the Turks.
But they were so blunt with their accusations against the Syrian regime. We even saw last week the file being opened again by Holland and France, claiming that the Syrian regime is using the chemical weapons and he will prove it later on.
Yeah, right, like they proved it the first time and it was proved exactly total disaster. No, I don't think so that we'll be able to do anything. And this is really the kind of desperation the Western leaders are in, because their policies have been totally bankrupt. And it is having a boomerang effect, and it's coming to hit them in the face. So they have to live with it, and there is nothing else they can do about it.
What are we going to see by June 3rd? Do you think that the elections will be held on time, or might there be an intervention that will actually break the timing of the elections?
Well, they are trying to disrupt the elections by escalation in the northern part of Syria and central parts of the South. I mean, just before getting to the studio, I was reading about the report of this army captain dissident who is in cahoots with the Israelis trying to establish a buffer zone between Syria, the hinterland of Syria, and Jordan, and the Golan Heights. Whether this is going to succeed or not, I doubt it very much, because nobody can stop the Syrian army from reclaiming, and don't think the Israelis have the stomach to undertake a full-fledged war, an open war.
They did mention it in several newspapers that they are not ready for any kind of war, even that when it was asked if it was going to be with Hezbollah or not.
I don't think it's the card, at least for the time being, that the Israelis can wage war. Now, in the north, Erdogan is still pursuing a policy of escalation. He believes that the incident in Kassab has provided him with political dividends in the municipal elections, and now he's looking forward to repeat the same thing to try to gain the presidency in the next forthcoming election. So
that's if he gets the Kurds to his side.
Well, yes and no. I mean, he is really playing very hard the sectarian card, and it's going to have consequences about the stability and the unity of Turkey. So I would not be surprised that within his own party, he will have people who say enough is enough. I don't think the opposition in Turkey is strong enough to topple him. But I think within the party himself, there are people who say he's taking us on the wrong path. I think you can start with the sitting president, Gül, who is trying to distance himself from the policies of Erdogan. And the leak, the intelligence leak of this discussion between Erdogan, Hatan, Davutoglu, and the third, and the general.
About stealing from the government and.
I mean, someone has leaked it, and who did leak it? Someone from who was there, which means that there is also an opposition within this very close circle to Erdogan policies. So we have to wait and see. But meanwhile, they will certainly try to disrupt the elections in the northern part of Syria. And that's why the Battle of Aleppo is going to take a particular significance in the next few weeks.
Basically, we know that there is an axis of power backing up the Syrian regime today, and there's also a resistance group that is actually assisting the Syrians within Syria. In the upcoming weeks, if we do not see the election set on time, what would that affect Syria, military speaking?
I don't think it's going, I mean, the only thing that can postpone the election is a major setback militarily in the north.
Mm-hmm.
Until this happens, I think the elections are going to take place as scheduled. Now, if the military setback, it must have been either a major offensive or something totally different from what we have seen over the last 3 years, which is not in the cards. So no matter how you look at it, you may have flare-ups, but it's the facts on the ground that are going to be determinant, and I don't see anything that can stop the advance of the Syrian army and those who are allied to it.
Do you think that Bashar al-Assad will be, perhaps we will be seeing a prolongation of his presidency?
I think he's going to be elected for 7 years. The question is, what will be the participation of the voting bloc? I mean, how many were going to vote? I think it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to win, but it does make a difference if he's winning with only 40% of participation, mm-hmm. or with 75% of participation, depending about that. I think the battle is going to be to create disturbances to reduce popular participation into the electoral process.
Mm-hmm.
So his election will be quote unquote tainted, that he really did not represent, or his election is not representative of the will of the majority of the Syrians. So, having said that, I think if today the elections are going to take place, definitely he's going to cross the 50% mark in terms of participation, and he will be gathering about 85 or 90% of that participation.
Do you think that we'll see a similar scene than that, what happened yesterday in Iraq, where during the ballots were being set in, a lot of bombs occurred? Within 1 month during the process, we saw 500 casualties in Iraq.
Well, Iraq is a more porous society than in Syria. In Syria, you have more homogeneity than in Iraq. Iraq, you have significant divisions within the polity, although I think the majority of the Iraqi peoples are really fed up with that kind of thing. But there are also regional forces that are playing and putting lots of money and really sponsoring the bombings. In Syria, there are bombings every now and then, but their frequency and their intensity is not as big as it is in Iraq, because they don't have the ability. I mean, the Syrian army has been able to limit the potential of having car bombs. What happened in Qalamun, the Battle of Qalamun, was a major strategic coup against sending car bombs to all parts of Syria.
And that even affected the security situation in Lebanon, as well. It was a turning
absolutely,
shift.
Absolutely. So, although I cannot discount the fact that every now and then you may have some car bombings, but they're not going to be comparable to what we are seeing, unfortunately, in Iraq. And I don't think they're going to change anything in terms of the face, except disruption and more mayhem among Syrians.
What about the situation in Lebanon? It was said that the presidential elections are also related to that of the situation in Syria. Might we see an elected president in Syria? Will that also affect the situation in Lebanon
positivity? I think a few weeks ago, President Assad has made a statement that the future president of Lebanon has to be reflecting the changes that are taking place in the region, which is a very strong statement, in my opinion. And I think the stalemate that we have seen last week and that we're going to see for the next few weeks, I think, is a reflection that unless a regional agreement is struck between key players, especially Iran and Saudi Arabia, and of course, by the same token, Russia and the Americans, and of course, the Syrians, there is not going to be an election in Lebanon. Now, the election in Syria, and depending, as I said, how much is it going to be the popular participation, is going to reflect about the return, so to speak, of the Syrian as a senior elector in Lebanese politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, today, the main most important domestic elector is Hezbollah, and there is no way you are going to have a president who is hostile to the resistance.
But that was the plan by the Westerns. They said
they can plan as much as they want. What can they do to implement it? They don't have the vote, as simple as that.
It was said that they will try to affect Michel Aoun, the head of the Free Patriotic Movement. We do know that the foreign minister, Jibran Basir, will be holding talks with Saad Hariri from the Future Movement to convince them to give votes for Michel.
That's why I said it has to be contingent upon agreement between the Russia and the
Iranians and the
Saudis. Mm-hmm. That, of course, the Saudis are going to say, what about Lebanon? And the Saudis have to agree that you cannot have a president who is totally hostile to the resistance. Hence, the chances of Michel Aoun have increased, because he can be a consensus, between quotation mark, president, if Al-Mustaqbal goes along. And the deal would be, okay, Aoun at the presidency and maybe Saad Hariri at the prime ministership. So if this happens, that will go a long way in diffusing tensions in Lebanon.
It was said that the compromise by Aoun would be that he would actually pull out from backing up Hezbollah.
No, he's not going to do that. And if this is more of wishful thinking, then they don't understand the depth of the strategic relationship between Hezbollah and Michel Aoun. Now, Hezbollah has accepted that Michel Aoun must have a certain margin of maneuver in terms of domestic politics. But in terms of the strategic issues, I don't think so. There is a way to, for the time being at least, to expect any deviation from that kind of understanding. In fact, if anything, Aoun has realized to what extent the Western powers and the regional allies are not really true to the world. So I think it is
that
the Americans...
But that has been the case long time ago. You said that there was always repetition of the same mistakes, the same strategies being embedded. It wasn't hard to see that the West has always been within a circle of fabrications.
Yes, but as I said, if you can't beat them, join them. So
definitely.
They don't like it, but they will have to play ball according to the new rules of engagement, so to speak. And they may think that at some point in time, it is possible to convince or persuade Michel Aoun to sever his relations with Hezbollah, or at worst, in their perspective, to have Aoun curb a little bit what they would view as excesses or endangering policies towards the Western interest in Lebanon and in the region. Well, I don't think they're going to succeed, but definitely Hezbollah is going to listen to what Aoun will have to say. Anything which does not really affect the strategic position of Lebanon in terms of its opposition to the Zionist entity is negotiable. But that on itself is not negotiable. So,
are you quite optimistic about the upcoming days?
It's not a question of optimistic. It is a question of reading the balance of power in the region and in Lebanon. I don't think Hezbollah has any particular interest in quote-unquote ruling Lebanon. Its presence in government is to ensure that its back is protected from any shenanigans that March 14th or those who are allied with the West and unfortunately, let's say, also to some extent with Israel, would be able to pull against Hezbollah. That's the only reason Hezbollah is in it. And you can see they have not forced the nomination of any particular high civil servant, or they have not asked for any particular key cabinet. They have left that to Amal. Okay, if that's what you want, then do it. But as far as the issue relating to the resistance, nobody touches that. So that gives a lot of room for maneuvering in terms of domestic politics for all the political parties in Lebanon.
Definitely. Dr. Ziad Al-Hafiz, thank you so much for the enlightenment. Thank you for
thank
the
you.
Deep analysis.
Thank you for having me.
Dear viewers, that's all we have on Spotlight Middle East. Henry Kissinger back in 1923 said, you can't make war in the Middle East without Egypt, and you can't make peace without Syria. And what we're seeing right now, the U.S. plan back then, means that the peace in the region isn't what they were aiming for. Thank you so much for watching Spotlight Middle East.